we are looking at the four horsemen of the apocalypse or the book of Revelation, the word apocalypse just means revelation. Many people look at the word apocalypse and they say, well, that's the end of the world. Prophetically, we know that's not true. The end of the world won't happen for at least, from this point forward, 1,007 years. It has to be the rapture of the church, 7 years of tribulation, 1,000-year kingdom on earth, and then cometh the end. But all this time, within, up until the kingdom age, there's a presence of evil in the world. Now, in the kingdom age, Satan, the false prophet, and the Antichrist will be bound in the abyss for those 1,000 years. And at the end of the kingdom age, Satan will be loosed for a little season. Now, whatever that is, we don't know. But essentially it means a short season, not a long season. It won't be a season if we think 3 months of the year is a season. It won't even be a full season. But during that time, he will be able to raise an army of insurrection against Jesus Christ, who is reigning from Jerusalem. Now, there is no satanic temptation in the world except what exists in the hearts of man. And yet, many men and women who are born during the kingdom age will not be born again. They will not trust in the Messiah, even though he is alive and living and ruling in the world. And there'll be a perfect government, otherwise governed by glorified believers, distributed throughout all the world, and yet unbelievers will still exist. People who hate the things of God. Yes, John.
Will Jewish people be saved?
Well, at the beginning of the kingdom, only saved people go into the kingdom age. So the nation of Israel at that time will be only saved Jews. They will marry, be given in marriage, have children, and then those children will need to trust in Christ, just like any Gentile does. And there'll be Gentiles who, of course, survive the kingdom, are born again, survive the tribulation, are born again, and will enter into the kingdom. And the Bible, of course, teaches as the numbers of the sands of the sea will be recovered, as well as the Jews, the numbers as the sands of the sea. But they'll all the children have to get saved. And I think the grand message of the kingdom age is even with a perfect government, beginning with all saved people, it ends up with a lot of lost people. And so there's failure. But the major failure is the human sin nature. The fact that we are not willing to submit ourselves to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. Karen.
Is curse lifted in the millennium or not till the new heaven and the new earth?
Not till the new heaven and the earth. There'll be a curse existing, otherwise there'll still be human beings in natural, sinful bodies, and who will, of course, require a priesthood, that new priesthood of believers. In the kingdom age, there's no need of, or in the new heaven and new earth, there's no need of a priesthood, because we'll all be priests before God. We'll represent ourselves, and God will represent himself to us. So there will be no need of a priesthood by then. Now, during the curse, remember now, when we say that there's no curse in the eternal state, there still is a curse, right? But there is no more death. And where does a curse exist in the eternal state? Remember that place at the white throne, Daniel? Well, the millennial reign is different than the eternal state. You know, we're talking about the eternal state. We're talking about, is there still a curse in the eternal state? Lost people cursed, and where are they? In hell, the lake of fire, which is the second death. And so, there's no curse anymore on the redeemed, who are now spending eternity with God. He shall be with us and shall be our God, and we will be able to speak with him face to face. And however that's going to work itself all out, I don't know. But remember at the beginning when Adam and Eve fell into sin, God's grace put humanity in the darkness. Why was it necessary for him to put humanity in the darkness to his revelation? Daniel? Right, his glory would have destroyed us. Now, Satan has used that darkness and ignorance for millennia to deceive. He is ultimately the deceiver. That's how he, of course, brought sin into the world through his own deception of Adam and brought sin into humanity and thereby stole dominion from Adam. And redemption is God's historical working in the darkness, which every time you think of the darkness, think of the darkness of the ignorance of God, that was necessary. Now the glory of God, if we go back and look at every time the glory of God is revealed, it is essentially the attributes, character, and nature of God manifest. And all of that perfection is, of course, the holiness of God. And, of course, it's his goal to restore humanity, the redeemed, back to that state of perfect holiness. That's also part of salvation. Now, Satan is just the opposite. He wants to keep us in the darkness of ignorance. And he wants to increase our ignorance with false information. He wants humanity to worship evil in some form. And that is the mystery of iniquity that doth already work. And so in the revelation of these four horsemen, we are seeing really what Satan's real goal is through the Antichrist. What his real objective is. He comes, first of all, as a peacemaker, counterfeiting Christ, bringing war. Then in the second seal, he comes offering life, and he brings destruction. Now in the third seal, he comes as a black horse. Again, he comes offering things he's not going to provide. And he is a deceiver. He is a destroyer. And we need to understand those things. Christians today are absolutely ignorant of the devices of Satan. And people do not want to teach on these things today in many churches. Not spoken of. Now, I understand that. Every time I teach on these things, I feel more oppressed and more stress comes into my life simply because I know that I'm attacking the very gates of hell. I should expect opposition, right? So when you preach on these kind of things, and the series that I've done on these kind of things are over the years have always been the most difficult times, months sometimes, where there are great difficulties and trials that come into our lives due to this kind of teaching. Satan does not want to be exposed. And I certainly ask that you pray for us as we prepare these things and begin to teach on them. So today we're going to look at the third seal judgment and the rider on the black horse. Now, when the second seal is opened, the Antichrist takes peace from the earth. He comes, that's the white horse, he comes promising peace. But when the second seal is opened, he takes peace. And the natural consequence is that men will begin to kill each other. Whether this was war or just various factions and small army gangs that will arise and begin destroying one another like gangland wars is unclear. Patty and I were watching a documentary on one of these major cities. I think one of them was Vancouver, Canada. And what they call the homeless situation, homelessness problem, which is really not a homeless issue at all. It's a mental health issue that nobody's dealing with. But there could be 30 to 100 murders a week in that area. People using drugs right onto the street, right in open view, and laying there in the street dying. Nobody to help. Now, this is a culture that we are developing here in the United States. Most major metropolitan areas of our country are here. They're there right now. Go take a look at Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon, Los Angeles, California, San Francisco, California, Dallas, Houston, Texas area, metropolitan of Minneapolis here, St. Paul. Take a look at these areas. New York City, Boston, Philadelphia. Philadelphia has become a place where it's dangerous to even go into the city. And, of course, we could list Chicago and Detroit and hundreds of other cities that are just like this. What is this? This is a preparation for this time. Imagine what will happen when the restraint of God is removed. It's almost there now. There is no restraint. The people are picked up for robbery, murder. They're given a bond. The bond out, a signature bond, often no money at all because they don't have any money. They don't have any room in the prisons for jails for them. So they release them back into the street. And the very next day, or the very next, maybe the same day, they're right back doing the same things again. So this culture is already rapidly developing around the world in most large cities of the world. London, for instance, is just almost gone. Sweden and Stockholm, Sweden is there. And over and over again this is. So this will happen on an international scale with many people struggling to gain power in this new world order. Hate and greed and selfishness will become the dominant motivational forces in the world. And now in these sealed judgments, we see God allowing the world to reap the corruption they have sown in their own rejection of the Lordship of Jesus Christ and the Word of God. Secular humanism is anti-Christ. Atheism is anti-Christ. They're not just unbelievers in God, they hate believers. And they hate any kind of thought about it. They evangelize their atheism. This is antichristism. So, in that we have the breakdown of civilization. And it's accomplished when there is no moral conviction to obey moral laws. The founding fathers of the United States of America said that. Washington said that. If we cease to be a nation, that of course Reagan said that. If we cease to be a nation that is believing, we'll cease to be a nation governed by the Word of God, and we'll end up in absolute chaos. And this type of society is then reduced to a police state, almost there, and to anarchy. Now, this is before the rapture of the church. Take the church and true Bible-believing Christians out of that. Now, the society tries to take us out of that now. Right? They try to isolate us. And that means if you're going to talk about Jesus, do it inside the walls of your church. Don't talk about him anywhere else. And it's almost like a culture shock if you mention the name of Jesus in a public place. So if this is the main descriptor of the 7-year tribulation, it will be much more devastating than the loss of lives than even in world war with neighbors killing neighbors. I think we're almost there. We are just about ready to have a civil war in this country. Now, have you noticed that most of the conservatives today are not necessarily Bible-believing Christians? And these folks, even though they're conservatives, I don't say they're any more dangerous than the liberals, because they would kill the conservative, but I think they're coming to the place where the conservatives are about ready to say enough of this. And they'll have a civil war. Now, I don't endorse that. I think that's completely wrong. But it could very much happen. And, maybe this country will come to that place where we had the first civil war, where people are going to have to choose on which side they're going to fight. Because I think that's very well could happen. Now, I think very quickly you're going to see our nation move into a police state. And we're almost there already, right? They're almost ready to federalize the state army reserves and military. They're already talking about that. What is that? That's a police state. Under a police state, you lose all of your constitutional rights. The rights to bear arms, those are gone. The rights to freedom of speech, those are gone. Freedom of press, those are gone. Under a police state, or martial law is what it's called, all of those are gone. That's why I don't think they're pushing too much for all this, because I think they're very close to knowing this is what they're going to do. Now, the great sword given to the Antichrist is obviously some great weapon or authority that will give him the ability for destruction of life directed primarily at Israel. But I think the great sword is not a military armament. I think the great sword is the internet. I think that is how they will control society. So sovereign, now that's a guess. It's completely subjective. The Bible doesn't say it's the internet, but it certainly could be a great tool, and it is a great tool of destruction in this world today. I don't know how any parent would ever let their child have a cell phone today. I'm not even sure I'm going to let Patty keep her. You know, she enjoys her phone, but I don't think that's something any child should have today. And certainly internet access should be greatly limited today. Not just for children, but for parents. And you need to put some protection and accountability upon the devices that you use. And every parent, I mean, it's expensive to do that. But do it. If you have a TV in your home, put some protective devices on it. Sovereignty is defined as absolute authority over life and death. And I believe this is what defines the great sword. And this sovereignty, this great sword, is going to be what is executed during this particular time. Look at Revelation 6, 5 through 6. This is the third seal. And when he opened the third seal, who opens it again? Who's opening it? The Lamb. And who is the Lamb? The resurrected Jesus Christ. Seated and glorified at the right hand of the Father. So he opened the third seal, and I heard the beast say. Now again, the beast is the instruments of God's judgment, the cherubim of God. The cherubim are what they are. Seraphim are what they do. Seraphim means burners. But they're the same beings. And here, the word beast simply means a living creature. He's not a fallen angel. He's an eternal, holy angel, righteous angel. And the third cherubim says what? Come and see. Who is he speaking to again? All the heavenly hosts around the throne of God, particularly the redeemed, who have been now resurrected and glorified. He says, come and see, or literally, come and watch. Jesus wants us to watch. And I beheld. Now, John here represents all believers. And lo, a black horse. He that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hands. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, a measure of wheat for a penny and 3 measures of barley for a penny. And see thou hurt not the oil and the wine. Now what are the balances representative of in our culture and throughout the world?
Commerce and trade.
Commerce and what?
Trade.
One other thing.
Payment.
Okay, payment. Another thing too. Justice. Right? Lady Justice, who is blinded and she holds what? Balances in her hand. All of these things are true. Now, I think it can represent all of these issues. And I think here, in this context, the primary issue of balances is trade and commerce. It is the economy. And so we could say, she holds the economy in her hand. And the control of the economy is what this is talking about. Now that is what's going on in this scenario, this context. So, she says a measure of wheat for a penny. You control the economy, you control what things cost. Okay, well, John, you're a farmer. Who controls what you sell your wheat for, your corn for?
Marketplace.
Marketplace. But who really controls it? That's government control in many cases. It's government subsidized and government control. Now, anything the government subsidizes, the government seeks to control to some degree. Now, years ago, they would tell a farmer, well, you can plant this and you can't plant this. And, if you've got some land that you don't want to grow anything on, we'll pay you not to grow anything on that. And over and over again, and the government started getting into agricultural business through these controls. Now the smart farmers said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. But not all of them did. And pretty soon you had the government subsidizing many farmers. Some of the farming industries were controlled greatly. Then they were controlling the cost of products by limiting what was exported and then what was imported. When we had great surpluses, there were times they were importing grains from other countries. We didn't need it. And what did that do to our prices here? Right, it lowered our prices. So who paid for it? Essential taxpayer, but the big people that really paid for it were the farmers. Because the price of their product was reduced by bad government. Now, this is the concept of these kind of controls. Now, one thing we learn right away, anytime you get the government controlling something they don't know anything about, there's going to be a mess. And they have done that. This is it. This will eventually end up in starvation of a lot of the people. Now, we've seen that in the dairy industry particularly, right? How many of you knew farmers who although they might have farmed an 80 or a 160 or maybe a section of land, they almost all had 100 heads of cows. Now, they didn't have dairy cows. They had some beef cows and maybe a few hogs and maybe some chickens. How many do that today? No. They're after this dairy farmer out west here right now, trying to bankrupt him, the big dairy farmer. How far? That's out past to the west here. Yeah, I think Murdoch. They're making claims that the workers he has there are not being paid and other things. And that's our attorney general here in the States after him. And they'll probably bankrupt them folks. Now, whether any of that is justifiable, I don't know. I'm not here to judge them. But so the obvious result of this third seal is what? Famine. Famine's coming. And apparently food will be scarce to the extent that everyone will be given a measured and rationed portion. Now, I'm not old enough. I was born after the Second World War. But there are people who lived during the Second World War. That would be just Fred, right? he's younger than I am. But that generation understood what rationing was. Things like beef and sugar and salt and all of those things were rationed. You had in England, you got a coupon. I think they did the same thing here. And you could go in and get so much with that coupon, but then after that, you weren't done. You were done. Now, out of that came the invention of things like Spam. And that was really the only meat that many people had in those days. And even that was some degree rationed. But apparently food's going to become scarce, that it's going to be rationed. And although the USA was the world's third producer of food, according to the 2020 statistics, China and India are the only two that produce more food. The U.S. was the largest exporter of food by far. So China and India produce more food than the USA. They're first and second. But due to their large populations, they consume their own product without any export and are actually importers of food. So we export to them, even though they produce much more than we do. We're literally a nation with very small populations compared to some of the nations of the world. I think we're around 340 million, something like that. And China and India both have billions of people. So at the time of the writing of the New Testament, a penny represented the wages a person earned for a day. How many went to the grocery store this last week? Now, it's not quite there yet, but we certainly realize that the cost of food has gone up exponentially in the last few years. In Venezuela and some of these other nations, the grocery, not only is everything extremely high priced, they don't have it. So two things contributed to this factor. The availability and distribution. And then secondly, of course, whether or not it's being produced. Now, if a man is going to have to work very hard to produce a product, and then at the end of that, he makes no income from it, how long is he going to keep doing that? Not very long. It's just not practical. That's what happened in the dairy industry and the hog industry and the beef industry around our country. Most of the producers, the small producers, which produce most of the product, have been taken over by large, huge companies, huge farmers, because they can do it on a mass production. But even they are not making a lot of money. And you say, how in the world can you spend $15 a pound for beef and not make money on it. Well, the farmer's not getting $15 a pound. Not anywhere close to it. So, at the time of the writing of the New Testament, a penny represented the wages of a person's 4 days' work. Otherwise, you worked all day long. The measure of wheat was a quart. And the intent of this comparison is that people will work all day just to feed themselves. And that will not always be possible. There will be times they won't make enough. Now, there are places in the world right today where people work a whole month for $3. Most of the food they eat, they grow themselves. They're self-sustaining. Now, if the United States again became a nation where we need to be self-sustaining, how many people do you think are educated and knowledgeable enough to even do it? Could they grow their own food, can it, have the knowledge of what it takes just to have what they need to sustain themselves? I don't think so. There's a lot more work to that than many people realize. So Matthew 20, verse 2 says, "And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day," this is in the parable of that parable, "he sent them away into his vineyard." Now, remember, this is a big objection, a big fight going on. Some had come in the late part of the day, and he paid them a penny, and some who had been there all day long, and they worked for the same amount, and the ones had been all there all day objected to the others getting the same amount. And Christ says, "Well, didn't you agree to work for that?" And the other ones who worked just a few hours, and they got it. He says, "Well, what does it matter to you what I agree to pay them? You got what you agreed. They got what they were given. And it's grace." That's a concept there of grace. So that's a teaching of that parable. Now, any questions, discussion about any of this so far? Anything you want to add or contribute? How many of you have experienced a degree of what we're seeing right here? Have you? What's it cost to feed your family a week? Well, we're not going to say, Chris. John?
Well, all these things, these problems and shortage of food and all that stuff, that's going to come during the tribulation.
Yes, it's all tribulation.
It will not come before the rapture.
Yes, it won't come before, well.
It will tend to.
Yeah, we see the seasons. Otherwise, we can see the setting of the sun, and we know the times and the seasons. So this is what we're seeing right now, is simply a precursor to something that is going to get much more severe during the tribulation time. This is all happening in the first 3.5 years of the trip. John?
And when we're talking about the big sword, and we're talking about the balances of justice, when we're talking about the internet, that's all going to come together for after the rapture, all going to come together for bad times forever.
Oh yeah, very, very difficult times. And again, the intent here is to represent the fact that this Antichrist is being revealed to Christians today so we can educate those who will go into the tribulation loss. And in that education of them, maybe they will say, okay, maybe that radical Daniel Johnson knew what he was talking about, and this Jesus he's talking about, we should maybe reconsider that. And that's really what the intent of this is in this text, John.
You don't mean that the Antichrist is being revealed to us. You mean that a type in the description of someone who will be that.
Right.
Being revealed, and if people are paying attention and they miss the rapture, then they better be really paying attention to get saved so they can get killed and go to heaven.
Yes.
Instead of going through all this other thing.
Yeah, the Antichrist may be alive on planet Earth right now, but this is after the rapture, and now these texts are given to believers who live now to teach people who they love about what's going to happen. Because I believe we're right there. I believe we're on that historical paradigm where we should be very much listening for the trump. I believe I watch for the Lord's coming every single day. I expect to hear the trump sound and hear the Lord say, come up hither. And I expect that to happen any day. And why then am I teaching this to a bunch of people who already believe the Bible and are born again? Because I believe we have a very short time to prepare the people who have not believed and have rejected Christ to use prophecy to teach them what's going to happen after you disappear. And I might just start that conversation. One of these days I'm going to disappear. And here's some of the things that are going to happen. Here's some of the things you should be watching for. And they're going to come presented to you as one thing, but they're not going to be that. They're going to be something else. They're going to offer this, but this is what they're going to get from it. Because God's not going to bless it. And when you see these things come, then remember all those times I've witnessed to you about Jesus Christ and be born again. And, you know, those are some things. And that's a good way to send these things out when you see them up on the internet or see them on the church website. Send them out to somebody and say, I want you to watch this. Because this is what's going to happen after that time I disappear. Now, I know I've got friends and brothers and sisters who would say, well, what makes you think you're going to make it? We're not. Now, that's a good question, right? I can say, well, it has nothing to do with me being good. It's totally of the grace of God that I've been born again. And you, too, can be born again. No matter how wicked I was before I got saved, or how many sins I've committed after I've got saved, none of that determines my salvation. My salvation is based upon what Christ has done, what he gives. And you can use this as a vehicle of witness to people. Anything else? Okay. So the probability is that this scarcity of food refers more to control and distribution of food than any lack of it. I believe in many places in the world they could produce plenty of food. And one of our major farmers could produce enough food to sustain most of an area much bigger than this all by themselves without any problem at all. So what needs to be done? Well, you have to eliminate those guys from the economy. You make things scarce. Not by the fact that it can't be produced, but by its control. If I have $1 million in my bank account, but I never spend any of it, never tithe off of it, never use it any way, does it make any difference at all? Is it absolutely useless?
Can't eat it, right?
I said that years ago when they took the United States off of the gold standard. For years I said, well, put the United States on a grain standard. Let them eat their stinking gold. What good is it? But there's value in food, right? I still think we should put our economy on a grain standard. I think it'd be a real tangible way of a good reason for you to have a couple sacks of soybeans in your house. So scarcity is going to be able to be used to gain absolute control. And remember, you don't have to have scarcity to make scarcity. All it is a scarcity of distribution and availability. And this is a real agenda behind fascist socialism. Now, I want you to think about those two terms. We hear the term bandied around socialism all over the place. And certainly it's there. But we don't have just socialism, nor do we have socialism that is moving towards communism. Communism never worked. But we have socialism that's moving towards fascism rapidly. Communism is when the government controls everything and takes everything and distributes only what they want. Fascism is when the government allows you to own your own businesses, practices, and share to some degree in the profit, but they control everything. And they control it with taxes. They take the majority back. Now, this is what's happened in China. Now, China, although they still consider themselves China, they are communists, they have become a fascist state. And they have free enterprise, although it's owned by individuals, it's controlled only by government. And that is essentially what the United States is developing into, a fascist society. Controlled by government. So this is what really behind liberal politics and their Green New Deal, hiding behind their noble smokescreen of redistribution of wealth. What matters here is that you understand who controls the redistribution. So it is not about redistribution, it's about control. And the redistribution is power to those in the control. Control is fascism. Now, I have this term bandied all around today, and of course, everybody seeks to be in control, but that's simply because you're in control. Conservatives in control, it's not fascism. I disagree with Christian nationalism as a movement. I think it's unbiblical. We're not trying to build a Christian nation. Nor should we. We are to seek to win souls and to build local churches who are honoring to Christ. That doesn't mean we shouldn't vote biblically and vote both with our convictions and our ethics, but we are not trying to build a theonomic institution in our country or a theocracy. Theonomy is when God controls. A theocracy is when God rules through people. The United States is not a theocracy or a theonomy. John?
The only government that's not going to have corruption is Jesus Christ.
Which government?
The only government that's not going to have corruption is Jesus Christ.
Exactly. And that, of course, is a perfect government that we'll have and governed by perfect people. That's a concept of elected by Jesus. They have a vocational election, the priesthood of all believers, who are going to be glorified and without sin natures. The corruption of government, of course, is overwhelming today. So the balances here of Revelation 6, 5 represent measurement and control. Anyone will be given an equal share. Everyone will. But it will essentially cost everything they earn to do so. So fascist socialism will achieve a 100% tax base. Have you ever wondered why that if you own a $100,000 house and pay so much taxes, and some other guy owns a $500,000 house, but he pays 10 times more taxes, what costs the government more money for him to live in that house than it does for the guy to live in the $100,000 house? It doesn't cost him any government anymore. So why should he pay 10 times more taxes? Why should the guy that works and earns $1 million pay more taxes than the guy that works and earns $20,000 proportionately? That's why I say we should have a percentage tax. And that's the only way it can be fair. Now, obviously, government costs. But most of the things government are involved in, they ought not be involved in at all. And that's not a political issue. it's just like the church or some things that in the church has a business doing certain things, but there are some things we completely stay out of. I try to stay out of, in many cases, the governance of another man's home. Now, obviously, we govern it by the truth. They're members of the church. There are certain things that we can't allow people to do and be members of the church. But they've got individual soul liberty to do anything they want in their home. If they're members of the church, we have to say, no, you can't do that and be a member of the church. You can still do it and be in your own home. That's between you and the Lord. But you can't do it and be a member of the church. So there are some over-governing principles here. So, I think the fascist socialists here will finally achieve a 100% tax base, which is essentially taking everything but what you need to sustain your life. They'll take everything else. And the probable picture here is that the government controls everything but does not own everything. That's communism. But giving people by measure according to their criteria of needs. So, of course, if a man has 6 children, he's going to have greater needs than a man who has 2. And, of course, we're already moving to that direction. So there's a control. Those in control never lack for anything but live in abundance and wealth. So where do you want to be? You want to be in that government. Because now you're the one that is the giver, the distributor. While you're taking the largest percentage of it. And of course, that's what's going on in our world today. That's what we call this will be a new fascist aristocracy. How many here are familiar with feudalism? You've heard the term? You know, most of us are our age. We were educated in school about feudalism and its horrors. And the European aristocracy, only the aristocrats could own property. You worked, either as a sharecropper or some way, for an aristocrat, and they gave you a pittance to support yourself. That's what fascist socialism is. You work for the government. And tell me if you don't think that's what's already happened. It's already developing. All you have to do is just take a certain avenue of people away from that restraint, and now it's going to be accepted on the widest scale. Of course, it's going to come under the guise of people who say, well, you know, the government's going to pay for my education, they're going to pay for my food, they're going to do this and they're going to do that, and then we come, of course, to the fourth seal judgment. Which, of course, is pay horse. That's when the government starts saying, okay, you don't produce, you don't eat. You are sick and you can't produce, we don't give you health care. So government will no longer be called government, but ministry. Do you know what various advances of socialism around the world, they call their sections of government what? Ministry. We had that here in the United States. I found it interesting that a lot of happened in the Obama era. The individuals within the Obama working force, the whole group, the swamp, started calling themselves comrades. I thought that was interesting since that is very much a communist term. So the Department of Agriculture will become the Ministry of Agriculture, serving. Even though they don't serve, that's the deception. Its head will become the Minister of Agriculture. What this means is socialism is it defines to whom you bow or worship in order to get your hand out. And those not aligned with most with those in control will live in want and desperation. That is finally what comes at the end of after the second aspect of the seal, or that second aspect of the tribulation. You have to take the mark. What is that? You bow. So we'll have to stop. We'll pick up with next week on the fourth seal and the rider on the pale horse. Of course, this is a concept of death and what happens there. Now, I believe we're seeing a lot of this come into place already right now. How many have saw on the news this week that the state of Minnesota is trying to pass a law for doctor-assisted suicides? See that? Now, what? Where is the opposition to this? There's almost none. Now, we talk about it, but there's no vocalization about it. There's no public outcry about it. There's no letter to the editor about it. I don't even get a paper, so there's no such, you know, most of the time nobody reads those things anymore anyway. The only discussion about it, what goes on in the social media, that's being controlled by liberals. So the discussion is absent in most cases from any kind of real discussion. But we'll look at that next week. Questions, comments?